She thought I didn't know. She thought she could fool me like the rest of the world, hiding behind her carefully curated posts, her polished image. But I saw through it. I always see through the lies. I've lived in this building for almost a decade, seen influencers come and go, flashing their fake lives in front of the camera, pretending everything's perfect. But she was different. There was something darker in her, lurking just beneath the surface. I caught it. I knew right away. The night Zara West died, I saw her. No one else was around. Just me, sitting in my apartment, watching through the window like I always do. Zara was coming down the stairwell. And then there was her, the rising Instagram star, the golden girl of the moment, following close behind. I couldn't hear what was said, but I saw the push. Saw the way Zara's head smacked against the concrete steps, the way her body crumpled. She didn't get back up. The girl, her name was Sophie, looked panicked. She crouched over Zara for a moment, then ran. It was sloppy, impulsive. I almost laughed at how easy it would be to ruin her. But why expose her right away when I could have a little fun first? I waited a few weeks, long enough for the police investigation to stall, long enough for Sophie to think that she'd gotten away with murder. Then I left the first note under her door. "I know what you did." It was simple, but effective. She didn't know who I was yet. Didn't realize it was me, her harmless neighbor, the man who always seemed to be in the background. I watched her read it through my peephole, her face turning pale, her hands trembling. She was afraid, just like I wanted. The next few days, I upped the game. Another note, more explicit this time. "I saw you push her." Her panic was delicious. She was unraveling, and I hadn't even begun. I knocked on her door that night. The look on her face when she opened it, it was priceless. I could practically taste the fear. "You've got a real problem on your hands," I said casually, pretending this was all so simple, so businesslike. "Lucky for you, I can be discreet." She didn't even argue. Didn't ask how much money I wanted. No, I wasn't after cash. That would have been boring. I wanted something more personal. Something that would remind her week after week who really held the power. "You'll bring me something of yours," I told her, leaning in close enough to smell her perfume. Something intimate. Every week. I saw the disgust in her eyes, but she nodded. She didn't have a choice. She was mine now. The weeks went by, and she complied like clockwork. Each time she handed over her expensive lingerie, I could see the humiliation written all over her face. It was beautiful. She was a star to her millions of followers, but to me, she was just a scared little girl with blood on her hands. But of course, it wasn't enough. It never is. Once you have control over someone, once you taste that power, you want more. I started asking for more expensive pieces, more frequent deliveries. Watching her squirm under my demands, it was intoxicating. I should have known she'd try something eventually, that she wouldn't just keep handing over her dignity forever. But I underestimated her desperation. Last night, she knocked on my door, like she always did, holding the latest piece. I could see it in her eyes. Something was different. But I took the lingerie from her, the soft lace slipping through my fingers. It felt lighter than usual, like it had been handled too carefully. "You've been very obedient," I said, grinning as I always did. I was about to close the door when she spoke. Her voice too steady, too calm. "I do what I have to." There was something in her tone, something cold. She turned to leave, but I didn't close the door. I stood there, watching her walk back to her apartment, feeling the fabric between my fingers. That's when I smelled it. The faintest hint of something metallic, something off. I wasn't stupid. I had been in the military once, years before. I knew what poison smelled like. A laugh bubbled up in my throat. Clever girl. She had finally decided to fight back. I wondered how long she'd been planning this, how many sleepless nights she'd spent trying to figure out how to get rid of me. I tossed the lingerie aside and pulled on a pair of gloves, examining it more closely. The seams were too neat, but the poison had been worked in somewhere. Maybe it was soaked into the lace, or maybe it was smeared along the edges. Well, either way, if I had worn it, if I had let it touch my skin, I'd have been dead within hours. I stood there in my small, dimly lit apartment thinking about what to do next. I could go to the police, turn her in for attempted murder, but where would be the fun in that? No, I wasn't done with Sophie yet. This morning, I slipped a final note under her door. Nice try, but you'll have to do better than that. I imagined her reading it, her face going pale again, her heart sinking as she realized she hadn't won. She'd never win. Not against me. I know everything about her. I know her routine, her brand, her secrets. She thinks she's clever, but I'm always two steps ahead. And now she's made her move, so I'll make mine. Maybe I'll stop asking for lingerie. Maybe next time I'll ask for something more. Something she can't replace. Her fame, her fortune, it all belongs to me now. She'll never know when I'll strike next. She's trapped, forever dancing on the strings I pull. And there's nothing she can do to cut herself free.
Would appreciate if you could hit the like button before moving on to the next story.
I had taken a week off from work so I could spend some time at the beach and recharge after a very grueling quarter. Unfortunately, there was a huge tropical storm on the day of my flight, so I had to cancel everything last minute. I still had a week off, so I decided to do a little staycation. I didn't tell anyone that I was still in town. With or without the beach, I needed my alone time. On my first day of vacation, I caught up on household chores and watched some movies. Nothing much happened until right before sunset, when I got a new message on my WhatsApp. The message said, "Hey Nikki, it's been forever. What's new?" It came from someone named Lori. I had no idea who Lori was. I clicked on her profile picture, which did nothing to jog my memory. She was an average-looking woman, about my age. I must have known her because I had her contact saved on my phone, but for the life of me, I had no memory of ever meeting her. I should have asked who she was, but I felt too awkward. Instead, I replied to her message as if I knew her. I told her about my job and all my recent relationship drama. It felt really easy to talk to her. She asked me if I still kept in contact with Troy or Maddie. Those were some of my friends from college, which meant that I probably knew Lori from college, too. I asked her questions about her life, which she answered, but nothing she said could jog my memory. We texted for a while, and I felt increasingly comfortable talking to her. I even told her about my staycation, making her the only one who knew that I was still in town. "Great," she wrote back. "Then you can come to my house party tomorrow." I politely told her no. I wanted to be by myself for the week. She totally understood. We continued texting for the next couple of hours before I went to bed. I still didn't remember her from college, but she definitely felt like an old friend. The next day, I checked in with some of my college friends for the first time in years. I asked them if they remembered a blonde girl named Lori. None of them did. I even sent them her photo to see if she looked familiar to them. She didn't. The mystery bugged me all day long. It was hard to relax when I kept thinking about Lori. By early evening, I got one more WhatsApp message from her. It read, "The party starts in an hour. I know you said you couldn't come, but my door is always open. It'll be like old times." Then she sent her address, which was only 10 minutes away. I wrote a very nice response telling her that I couldn't go, but then I erased it all. My curiosity was getting the better of me. I wrote, "I can make it." She answered with a thumbs up emoji. I spent an hour getting ready, and then I drove to the address. It was a small house on a suburban street, nothing too special. As I parked my car, I could tell that the party was already in full swing. There must have been dozens of people inside, all talking and laughing. I approached the door, both nervous and excited. Before I could knock, a man raced toward me from across the street. It looked like he'd been pacing back and forth. "You going to Lori's party?" he asked. "Yes," I said. "You're coming in too?"
"I was going to," he said.
"But I have to ask you, how do you know Lori?" "We're old friends," I answered, somewhat evasively. "Good," he said, "because she messaged me on WhatsApp like we were old friends, but I was too embarrassed to admit that I didn't remember her, and now I'm here." I told him that the same thing happened to me. This was more than just a coincidence. This was proof that Lori was trying to trick us. The man, who introduced himself as Juan, even theorized that Lori had somehow stolen our phones and secretly added her name into our contacts. I wasn't quite ready to believe that, but I couldn't think of any other explanation. Whatever the case, neither of us were comfortable going to the party anymore. We were both still so curious, though. So we found a hiding place in the bushes outside her house where we could see into the window. We saw Lori passing out cups of punch to all her guests. Then she clinked her glass, and all the talking and laughing stopped. "Welcome, one and all," she announced. "It's so wonderful to see all my old friends again." The other people in the room all exchanged glances. I couldn't be certain, but it seemed like they were all as confused as I was. Lori must have used her WhatsApp trick on all of them, too. While Juan and I were crouched outside the window, Lori began to make a long, weird speech about friendship. It didn't make any sense. The guests were fidgeting in place. No one wanted to be there. And I would have been one of them, too, if I hadn't met Juan before I entered. Lori finished her speech and shouted, "Cheers!" Juan nudged me in the side. "Do you see that?" He nodded toward the refreshment table behind Lori. There were three big bowls of punch, and under the table was a small box of rat poison. Juan and I both jumped up and slammed our fists against the window. "Wait! Stop! It's poisoned!" I couldn't see if any of the guests had drunk anything because Lori ran to the window and blocked our view. "Get out!" she screamed at us, pounding against the glass. Juan grabbed my hand and we raced back to the street. My car was closer, so we got inside and called the police. The cops arrived almost immediately and arrested Lori. At her trial, we learned that she went from town to town, stealing phones in public places, adding her contact information, striking up conversations, and luring strangers to her mass poisonings. She always targeted shy people who were more likely to pretend to remember someone out of politeness. We also learned that absolutely no one at her last party died. Juan and I had warned them all in time. The offer had been too good to pass up. I was desperate, on my last legs after losing a major client, and the house had popped up on my radar at just the right time. It cost half the rent I was paying in my old place, and the building was a beautiful Victorian structure that wouldn't seem out of place in a period drama. I answered the ad, and within the week, all the contracts were signed, and I was ready to move in. The ad had mentioned sharing the space with two other tenants, but I didn't meet either of them until a few days after I had officially moved in. I also found a strange note waiting on my nightstand. House rules. Keep your door locked at all times. If someone knocks on your door, do not answer it. I figured it was one of the tenants playing a joke on me and decided to toss the scrap of paper into the bin, thinking nothing more of it as I unpacked my belongings into the space. The house was old, and there were traces of damp in the corners, but for the price, I could hardly complain. I met the first tenant while I was returning from a grocery store run, trying to shoulder through the front door with two large shopping bags. He was an older man, with straggly gray hair and wide eyes that always seemed to be darting everywhere.
"Did you get the note?"
he asked me as soon as he saw me, hardly bothering to greet me or introduce himself. I stared at him. Sorry?
"The note! On your stand! You read it, right? You need to follow the rules!"
I swallowed, shifting the heavy bags as I stood in the entryway of the house. "I saw the note, yes," I said, frowning. He was the one who'd put it there? It didn't seem like he was joking, either.
"Never open your door,"
the man said, before turning away and disappearing back up the stairs. I didn't even know his name. I dismissed the odd encounter and began putting my groceries away. There were three people living here, including myself, and we'd each been assigned a shelf in the fridge. One of them contained nothing but some old pickles and a jar of jam. The other was completely empty. Mine was the only one with actual food on it. I met the second tenant as I was heading back up to my room. Though, perhaps, met is a stretch. I noticed as I was walking along the landing that the door on the left was partially ajar. A face, half obscured by darkness, was peering through the gap. When I noticed the figure, I jumped, and the door quickly slammed shut, the lock turning on the other side. It had only been for a second, but I was certain the face belonged to a woman. When I walked past her room, my nose twitched at a strange and rather unpleasant smell, though I couldn't figure out what it was. I didn't see either of them again over the next few days, though about a week after moving in, something strange happened. It was sometime in the early hours of the morning when I awoke to the sound of someone knocking on my door. I sat up in bed, still groggy from my sleep, and turned to face the door. The frantic rap of knuckles against the wood continued, rousing me completely awake. Climbing out of bed and shivering in the cold air, I began to reach for the handle when something tugged at the back of my head. A torn note left on my nightstand. "If someone knocks on your door, do not answer it." I pulled back my hand, swallowing nervously. Who would be knocking at my door at this time anyway? Well, instead of opening the door, I called out, "Who is it?" Immediately, the knocking stopped. The silence fell heavy around me. Then, as my heart lurched into my chest, the handle began to turn. For the sliver of a second, a panic thought crossed my mind. Had I locked the door before going to bed? I couldn't remember. But if it was open, then whoever was outside was about to come in, and I wasn't sure I wanted that. I grabbed the handle and twisted it the other way, stopping it from opening. "Who is it?" I called again, but nobody answered. Was it one of the tenants? The old paranoid man or the strange woman? Or was it someone else completely? But that was impossible. No one could get inside the house except for the three of us and the landlord. The stranger on the other side kept trying to turn the handle, but I held it in place, my heart thudding wildly in my chest. On the other side of the door, I thought I might have heard a heavy, raspy breath. Or it could have been my own wheezing gasp as the handle was finally released, and I hastily slid the lock into place when I realized it had been open after all. I pressed my ear to the door and listened, hearing the soft creak of retreating footsteps.
I didn't hear any doors open or close. The footsteps simply faded away, and the night went silent once more. I double-checked the lock, and then went back to bed, though I couldn't sleep for the rest of the night. The strange old man was in the kitchen the next morning, eating pickles out of a jar. He looked up as I walked in, his eyes focusing on me.
They visited you last night, didn't they?
I froze, my throat tightening as I recalled the stranger outside my door. Who did? Who was that? The man cracked the wizened smile.
Nobody knows who they are, but the last tenant who let them in went missing. Nobody ever saw them again. But as long as you remember the rules, you'll be fine.
I decided to do some research into the house and its previous tenants, and what I found made my blood run cold. According to an article I found online, a man by the name of Thomas Ingle had gone missing a few months ago, with his last known address the very same as the building I was living in. Nobody knew what had happened to him, and a body was never found. Whether or not his disappearance really was related to the person who had tried to get into my room last night, I didn't want to risk it. The peculiar tenant should have been a warning enough that staying there wasn't a good idea. That same afternoon, I packed up my things and left. I had a friend who offered to let me crash for a few days until I found somewhere else to live. Even if the rent was cheap, I wasn't desperate enough to risk ending up like the last person who'd rented there. And while I never did find out who had tried to get into my room that night, maybe that was for the best. My girlfriend, Alicia, and I had been renting an apartment for a few months before we met the landlord. It was a nice place in a nice area, and the landlord had seemed amicable enough during our phone conversations, though we'd never actually seen each other in person due to him living further away. The apartment itself was situated in a fairly quiet part of town, and although we hadn't made many friends in the area, we had settled in well enough and planned to stay for a while, so long as the rent didn't increase too much. One afternoon, a couple of months after moving in, there was a knock at the door. My girlfriend was out at the time, and I thought that maybe she'd forgotten a key and she needed me to let her back in, since I wasn't expecting anyone. I got up from the sofa to answer the door, and I found a middle-aged man standing on the threshold. He was tall and lanky, with a mop of dark hair and tanned, leathery-looking skin. "Hello," he said, sticking out his hand towards me. "I'm Jack." I stared at him for a moment of silence before it clicked. Jack was the name of our landlord. "Oh, hi," I said, taking his hand and shaking it. "It's good to finally meet you." He was a little older than I had expected based on our previous interactions over the phone, and his voice was a little more nasally than I remembered. But, you know, everyone sounded different on a phone. "I just wanted to see how you were settling in." "Encountered any issues?" Jack continued, letting his hand fall back to his side. I noticed a tool belt around his waist, and I wondered if he worked on maintenance and DIY in the building as well as being the landlord. "Nah, everything's good," I told him. "We're both happy here."
"Great to hear,"
he said, smiling at me with his teeth. He hesitated, seeming reluctant to leave.
"I'm sorry to ask, but would you mind if I used your bathroom?"
I blinked at him in surprise. Felt like an odd request, but since he was the landlord, I felt awkward refusing. Sure, I said, letting him in.
"Thanks. I won't be a minute."
He disappeared down the hallway, and a second later I heard the bathroom door lock shut. I waited in the front room, hoping he would leave right after he was done. It was good to finally put a face to the person, but that didn't mean I wanted him hanging around. When he didn't come back after 5 minutes, I went to go see what was taking so long. I didn't want him to be snooping around the apartment or something. He might have been the landlord, but my girlfriend and I were the ones living here, and we had the right to our own privacy. The bathroom door was still shut, and as I stood in the hallway outside, I heard a soft thump from within. Everything all right? I called, frowning when I heard another faint thud and a metallic clang. What was he doing in there? After a second, the door opened, and Jack stood with a wrench in his hand, scratching a hand over his stubbled cheek.
It looks like your toilet's broken, he told me.
I stared at him in confusion and then glanced over his shoulder where there was water leaking across the floor from the toilet. Huh? But it seems fine earlier.
It shouldn't take me too long to fix, he continued,
either ignoring or not noticing my obvious puzzlement. Surely I would have noticed if there was a leak before. Had it only happened just now? Or had Jack done something to it on purpose? Surely he didn't expect me to pay him to fix it.
No extra charge, of course, he continued, as if he was reading my thoughts. As the landlord, it's my duty to make sure this place is up to scratch for my tenants.
I decided to trust him for the moment and nodded. All right, if you think it's an easy fix, I said, because I did want to keep up an amicable relationship with my landlord, even if he did seem a bit strange.
Easy as pie, I reckon, he said, with another toothy grin.
Do you need anything? I asked, but he shook his head, patting the belt around his waist.
Got everything I need right here.
He turned and headed back into the bathroom, whistling under his breath. I stood in the doorway for a moment longer, until he shot me a pointed look, as if he didn't want me to watch him fix it. I still felt a little off about the whole thing, but I left him to fix the toilet and I wandered back into the front room, wondering when Alicia would be getting home. She was always much better at dealing with people than I was. I heard another series of thumps, bangs, and clatters from the bathroom, but I fought the urge to go and check on him. He knew this place better than I did, so I had to put some trust into the fact that he knew what he was doing. Alicia turned up about 10 minutes later, while Jack was still working on the toilet. As soon as she heard the noises from the bathroom, she shot me a confused look. What's that? I explained what had happened, and she went to go introduce herself to Jack. I trailed after her, wondering if he was almost done. It had been 15 minutes, after all, and he had said it was an easy fix. Jack was on his knees, doing something behind the toilet basin when Alicia cleared her throat and introduced herself from the doorway. The landlord quickly stood up and turned around, wiping a hand over his sweat-slicked brow.
Oh, hello, I'm Jack. Nice to meet you.
Alicia's eyes widened slightly when she saw him, but she plastered a fake smile on her lips and nodded.
It's nice to meet you too, she said,
a tightness in her voice that hadn't been there before. I observed silently from behind her, wondering why she was acting so strange. Did she recognize him? She caught my eye with an unspoken message, and I cleared my throat. We'll leave you to get on. The two of us left him and congregated in the kitchen, where Alicia grabbed my arm and whispered urgently to me,
"That's not the landlord."
I stared at her, taken aback. "What do you mean?"
"I've seen a picture of him," she continued, her voice a little breathless, "and he looks nothing like that. Who the hell have you let into our home?"
I
don't know,
I stuttered, the reality of the situation sinking in. Had I let a complete stranger into our apartment? Was I letting a complete stranger fix the toilet? Had it even been broken to start with?
He knocked on our door and introduced himself as Jack. What else was I supposed to think? I've never seen the landlord before.
Alicia shook her head and pinched the bridge of her nose.
What do we do? We need to get him out of here.
I bit my lip ruminatively.
Maybe I could ask him for some ID or something? If he realizes we're onto him, he might leave on his own. Okay. But if it doesn't work, I'm calling the police.
I nodded and hurried back to the toilet, an anxious flutter in my chest.
I couldn't believe that I'd let a complete stranger into our apartment.
Even if I didn't know what Jack looked like, I should have at least asked for some form of identification to prove who he was, or trusted my gut instinct. But now that I thought about it, he really sounded nothing like the man we'd been speaking to on the phone, the real landlord. So, just who was this man? So, Jack, I should have asked you this earlier, but do you have some kind of ID? The man cocked his head at me, his dark brows furrowing.
ID?
Yeah, I continued, forcing myself not to lose my nerve. I had to check who this man was. My girlfriend kindly reminded me that I shouldn't go letting strangers into the apartment without, you know, confirming their identity. The man's lips thinned, and for a moment it was almost like he was sneering at me.
I don't have any ID on me, he said matter-of-factly.
I became astutely aware of the wrench he was still holding in his hand. Now that I knew he wasn't who he said he was, the tool looked a lot more threatening than before. He had to have broken the toilet on purpose, to give himself a reason to stick around. What his intentions were, however, I had no idea, and I didn't want to find out. I'm going to ask you to leave then, I said, trying to keep calm. The stranger stepped towards me, the wrench swinging between his fingers, and I swallowed down the panic in my throat.
Oh? Why is that? Because you don't believe me?
I eyed the wrench. Was he going to hurt me? Had that been his intention from the start? Waiting for me to lower my guard before he acted? Luckily, the stranger never got the chance to do anything. Alicia had already called the police while I was talking to him, and they arrived while he was still cornering me in the bathroom. They escorted him out of the apartment, and we never saw him again. After that, I was a lot more wary about letting people into the apartment. My best friend Catherine got married last summer. She decided to have a destination wedding in Cabo. I was excited to go because it was my first time out of the country. But I had some mixed feelings about the whole thing. I'd only met her fiancé, Andrew, once, and I did not have a good feeling about him. Catherine was always so cool. She was the life of the party wherever she went. But Andrew seemed so serious. Catherine told me that he was really religious, and he didn't like to go out and socialize. I worried that she would change her whole personality to make him happy, and I didn't want that to happen. She promised me that he was a good man. She begged me to give him a chance. But after that first meeting, I never even got to see him. Whenever we planned to get together, Catherine would always cancel at the last minute. I barely saw her for months until I got that wedding invitation in the mail. I was upset that she planned the whole thing without me. Ever since we were girls, we always planned on being maids of honor in each other's weddings. But I guess she decided that she wasn't even going to have bridesmaids or a bachelorette party. She said she wanted to keep it small. The weirdest thing was that none of our other friends were invited. She said that I was the only non-relative going. Honestly, the whole thing felt weird, but of course I congratulated her and told her I'd be there. When I got down to Cabo, I checked into the beach resort that Catherine picked out. The place was so nice. It was right on the beach and really secluded from all the touristy places in the city. Catherine chose an amazing hotel, but I was kind of sad that none of our other friends were there to enjoy it. After I checked in, I called Catherine to say that I'd arrived. She told me to meet her and Andrew at the pool. When I got there, she was sitting on a lounge chair with Andrew and another guy who looked a lot like Andrew. She said his name was David, and he was Andrew's twin. He was pretty handsome, but he also had the same serious expression as his brother. They both were dressed in loose white clothes. And I realized that Catherine was trying to play matchmaker between me and David. I tried to be nice, but I really wasn't interested. After a while, Andrew told Catherine that they needed to get back to their room. They left me and David alone. Like I thought, it was a total setup. I can't tell you how mad I was. This was a wedding. It was supposed to be all about Catherine. I did not want to be set up with her creepy fiancé's creepy brother. no matter how good-looking he was. I tried to be as polite as I could, though. I asked him questions about his family and his job, but he kept bringing the subject back to his weird church. Honestly, it sounded more like a cult than a church. I told him I'd rather not talk about religion. And then he got quiet and mumbled something about hell under his breath. He said, I'm pretty sure he said, this is your last chance. By that point, I'd had enough. I told him it was nice to meet him, and I stormed off. I knew that this wedding was going to be a disaster, but that wouldn't stop me from at least enjoying the scenery. I started walking along the beach, and I noticed something weird. All the other people on the beach were wearing the same loose white clothes as Andrew and David. My jean shorts and red shirt really stood out. And all of those people were staring at me. None of them smiled. Still, I ignored the creepiness and walked along the water. I really tried to enjoy the view, but those people just would not stop staring. Eventually, I had enough and went to my hotel room. That night, Catherine knocked on my door. We talked for a while, but she kept asking me what I thought about David. She even joked about changing plans and having a double wedding tomorrow. I told her I wasn't interested. She got this offended look on her face and said, "You don't have a lot of time, you know." "Are you saying that I'm getting too old to find a husband?" I asked. This turned into an argument. The first real argument I had with Catherine since we were kids. It was awful. I had no idea why she wanted to push me and David together. And she eventually apologized and left, but I was so angry that I couldn't sleep the whole night. The next morning, I woke up and got ready for the ceremony. I should have been excited, but I really wasn't. I just wanted this to be over with. They had folding chairs on the sand, plus a little cabana thing where they would say their vows or whatever. They also had tables set up with bowls of punch. I saw that all the guests were still wearing white, except me. They lined up at the punch bowl, and Andrew served them each drinks. I got in line because there was no way I'd sit through this ceremony sober. When it was my turn for Andrew to pour me a drink, he stopped. "I heard you're not interested in my brother," he said. "Nope," I told him. "Sorry." "And you're not interested in joining our church?" "Nope," I said again. He sighed, and then poured me a drink from a separate punch bowl from everyone else. "This one's just for you, then." I took the plastic cup, a little creeped out that he'd poured me something that was different from everyone else. I guess he could see the look on my face because he explained, "Our church doesn't drink alcohol, but I assume you do, so here you go." I started to drink, but he told me that I had to wait until after the vows. He seemed pretty serious about it, too. Whatever. I sat in the front row and waited for the ceremony to start. Music began to play, and Catherine stepped out of the hotel, wearing a white dress that really didn't stand out next to all the other white clothes. She and Andrew walked down the aisle together, and as she passed me, she looked at the drink in my hand. Something seemed off. Her smile faded. But she kept going. Together, her and Andrew stood in front of the preacher guy, said their vows, and kissed. Then, all at once, everyone raised their glasses to drink from their cups. David, who was sitting behind me, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Cheers." He smiled coldly at me. That's when I noticed that everyone was glancing at me, waiting to see if I'd drink. Something really strange was happening. I got a real cult vibe from this whole thing, and all I could think was that they'd put something in my drink. I pretended to sip from the cup, but I didn't let any of that punch into my mouth. "I'm so sorry," she said. "You should have accepted David. You should have joined us." Yep, this was definitely a cult, and they definitely tried to poison me because I wasn't one of them. And the worst part was, Catherine was in on it. My best friend since elementary school had tried to poison me. I was surrounded by them now.
and they were all waiting for me to pass out or choke or something. I needed to get out of there, but I knew they'd stop me. So I dropped the punch and started stumbling around as if the poison was working. Everyone started to laugh and clap. I stumbled past the crowd, and when I reached the sidewalk, I broke out into a full-on run and raced out of there. They realized I hadn't been poisoned after all, but it was too late. In seconds, I was gone. I ended up going straight to the police station, but when the officers arrived at the resort, Catherine and her entire party had already checked out. Honestly, I don't know why my best friend would agree to join a group like that, and I hope that she'll eventually come to her senses. But in the meantime, I have to be very careful in case they try to come after me again.